I'm David Davenport.
If you're 62 years of age or older, we can get you a reverse mortgage, which will get you an income stream or a lump sum distribution. Contact us at MortgageMinuteGuy.com.
The Predator hangs miles above hostile territory. For 24 hours at a stretch, it hunts for roadside bombs, the weapons of choice for terrorists. And then it strikes upon command. Tom Donovan pilots the Predator, but controls the aircraft from roughly 7,000 miles away, operating near Las Vegas. Flying the Predator is Captain Donovan's part-time job in the Air Force Reserve. He can serve his country while still working full-time as a commercial airline pilot. The Air Force Reserve. Stationed locally, serving globally.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get so tired of Christians telling you that their way is the only way. What about other religions, and how do we know that any God even exists at all, for that matter? If these are your questions, let me say I respect them. I think you're actually asking good questions, and I think they're very fair. All I can say is welcome, welcome to our forum. This is a forum for skeptics and doubters. Theme, Christianity, and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Now, we are going to take a bit of a break from politics today, and that might surprise you because politics is the name of life these last few weeks. Of course, there's plenty going on, from the $70 billion bailout to the debate between Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. We've been a little top-heavy on politics lately, as well we should be this close to the election. But I'm telling you, this has been an intense week for all Americans. So I thought it might be good to take a week off and return to some of our other reoccurring themes. I mean, honestly, if I hear the name Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac one more time, I'm going to open up a window and scream. And I thought it might be nice to be maybe the one show on the radio this week that's not talking about Fannie or Freddie, our two pals. Now, I have written several huge, and I mean huge, detailed blogs, both about the bailout and the debate. You can read those online anytime if you're dying to know what I have to say. And you should be dying to know what your old pop Bob has to say about it. Just go to bobsiegel.townhall.com. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.townhall.com. But recently, Willow Creek Church, which is a very famous, nationally famous, world famous church, they started subchurches all over the country. Original headquarters is out of Illinois. They offered a public lament that today's generation of evangelical Christians has ignored apologetics. Well, what's apologetics? If you're new to the Bob Siegel Show, apologetics is the theme of the Bob Siegel Show. Quite simply, apologetics is the intellectual and moral defense of Christianity. And when a church with the credibility of Willow Creek offered that as a public lament, I got to tell you, it was music to my ears. And not just me, but other Christian apologists who have been concerned about a postmodern trend for years. Very well-known apologist Ravi Zacharias put it best, and he put it best quite some time ago when he tried to warn that we were going this direction. He said, "We have not taught our people how to defend this." Well, what did he mean by this? By this, he meant the gospel. Gospel means good news. The good news that Jesus Christ died for our sins, rose from the dead, and came to deliver us both from the sin we commit and the sin committed against us. To say that the gospel is frequently attacked today in every direction, from our culture, from our schools, to our media, to the blogosphere, well, it's the understatement of the century. An apologist is merely one who defends the gospel. Although this has been a problem for years with the church at large, I got to tell you, One arena, which used to include apologetics as a substantial part of its work, was the campus ministry. Unfortunately, much has changed, and I saw it coming back in the mid-90s when I attended a campus ministry conference in Atlanta, Georgia. In one of the seminars, the instructor said that apologetics were irrelevant today because we were reaching out to a postmodern world. By that, he meant that moral relativism was making it difficult to talk about values without sounding dogmatic or old-fashioned. He also meant that rational, linear thoughts were looked down upon, and people today are more concerned with emotion. The best way to share the gospel, he said, was through personal stories about your experiences with God. Now, having graduated San Jose State as a drama major and being one who actually performs one-man plays all over the country, I certainly see the value of stories. In fact, even when I teach, I try to load the lecture with stories because I know that the academic style can often be boring. But you're never bored when you listen to me, or at least I hope you're not, because I do load it up with stories and illustrations. So I have no disagreement with any challenge about the mode of the message. As for our own testimony being more important than a long discussion about Bible manuscripts, again, totally agree, 100% agree. Any other apologist would also agree. You see, contrary to popular opinion, apologists are not people who think they can argue souls into the kingdom. We are very aware that unless the Holy Spirit does a work dramatically in somebody's heart, nothing we say is going to make any difference. And as one who does all kinds of evangelism, I've always taught that apologetics is a small part of the pie. My very first evangelism training class asks the students to write out and memorize their own testimony. Now, by testimony, I do not mean how one got saved, although that can certainly be included. That's usually all we think about. And that can be kind of intimidating because we always hear these popular testimonies, you know, these supernova star testimonies. I was all spaced out on drugs before I became a Christian. Dude, I was a murderer before I became a Christian, and I'm not anymore, but y'all better pray I don't backslide, you know what I'm saying? And then you have some other guy that says, well, oh boy, that sounds pretty exciting. This guy was on a safari, and just as the cannibals were about to eat him, lightning came down from the sky, and God introduced himself. I was in junior high, and I went to a Bible camp, and I shook the pastor's hand and prayed with him after the sermon. I guess that's not a good testimony. No, look. I'm defining testimony as what God does in your life now, today, to remind us that he's real. How does he show you he's there? What kinds of specific prayer requests have been answered? So that's more important than 1,000 apologetics. Apologetics are specialists. They understand that their work is only one of many key ministries. Now, the purpose of my talk right now is not to argue that apologetics is more important than anything else. Instead, I'm merely responding to the accusation that apologetics has become irrelevant. Irrelevant? Irrelevant? Never in the history of America has Christianity been hated, ridiculed, dissected, or disproven, I say disproven in quotes, in the college classroom. Never more than today. Apologetics are merely the other side of the story. With all due respect, such a response has never been more relevant. When a seeking undergrad wants to get close to God, the worst thing he can do is take a religious studies class. I took religious studies classes, and I know what they're like today because I speak in religious studies classes as a guest speaker. In a typical religious studies class, the professor says on orientation day, "In this class, we will not critique religions. We will merely study what they teach and allow them to speak for themselves." What he means is that he's not going to critique any religion except Christianity. And then the professor continues, "In this class, we are going to learn to respect all religions." What he means is that you're going to learn to respect all religions except Christianity. On the day you study Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, or even some religion about aliens being hatched from space pods, you will learn about how beautiful the religion is. But on the day you study Christianity, you're going to learn that the Bible is a chauvinistic book and a racist book. It promotes genocide. It promotes slavery. The Bible is also full of contradictions. Oh, yes. And the Bible, of course, has been rewritten and mistranslated. And if any Christian dares to argue with the professor and defend the gospel, whoa, buddy, back off. Separation between church and state. You're not allowed to preach in here. Funny. Really funny how this separation never cuts both ways. People can say any vile thing they want about Christianity, but we Christians dare not defend ourselves? Is that how it works? But I got to tell you, these discussions aren't limited to religious studies. God's good name is slandered in science, philosophy, humanities, you name it. Christianity is being torn to shreds. Now, without minimizing the love and gentleness of campus Christian clubs who still quietly lead individuals to Christ, not wanting to make too many waves, our universities and institutions have been virtually abandoned because people are simply unwilling to take on the administrations or the instructors. They may save a student here and there, but what about the administration and the instructors? We are unwilling to stand against the very philosophy of the university. We need to weigh the influence of an on-campus Christian fellowship against the barrage of teaching students who are hearing day in and day out from their professors. Now, why do most of our Christian teachers with similar credentials, sometimes better credentials, why do they teach at private schools? Why are they only at Bible colleges? Why have things become so darn polarized? How is this building the kingdom of God in any long-lasting, substantial way? Is it not part of our goal to transform institutions? If the answer to these questions is that apologetics has become irrelevant, then allow me to please ask, what exactly is the alternative plan to take back our universities? Maybe there is no such plan. Oh, sure, we can still put a few drowning souls on our life raft, but the boat itself? I guess we'll just let it sink. Now, apologetics first became a word associated with Christianity during the 2nd century. Early church leaders verified Christianity in the face of Roman persecution, attempting to ward off certain accusations or misunderstandings, and in doing so, made the term apologist a popular one. They not only defended Christianity academically, they also defended Christianity morally. Of course, the only morality Roman authorities cared about was the security of the Roman Empire. It was the task of the early Christian apologists to assure the emperors and governors that the gospel of Jesus Christ posed no threat to Rome. But they also pointed to the plain truth of the event. The resurrection of Jesus was verified history, and recent history at that. One could check the report of Pontius Pilate in the imperial archives and find all the detail and verification they wanted. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. So, you think you can run your new business without a website? Hello, McFly. How are they going to discover your business? The phone book? Do people even use that thing anymore? Or maybe you just leave your business card in restaurants next to the generous tip, but you won't be able to afford that generosity much longer if you don't start using the internet. I do understand. If you're anything like me, you entered the computer age kicking and screaming. After all, I'm the artist type. That's a fancy way of saying that the only time I fix a computer myself is by rebooting or remembering to plug it in. But I'll tell you, even though I'm more into the arts than the sciences, I use my computer constantly, all day long, in fact, and I couldn't even imagine getting by without my website. Let me tell you how to build a website of your own simply and easily without the cost and trouble of a designer. The name is Web Studio. I don't see you writing this down. Web Studio. Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without knowing HTML. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. Sounds simple? The program includes 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. And don't worry, you can still use that sharp-looking business card. Just print your website on it. And welcome. Welcome to the 21st century. Did you know we've been to the moon?
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-379-2552. 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
This is Bob Siegel, the Christian apologist. I always like telling people I'm an apologist because nobody knows what the heck it is. Now, apologist is a kind of evangelist, but I say I'm an evangelist, and then they think of these people they've seen on TV and the silver hair and all that stuff. And so I'd rather explain what an apologist is than have them think they know what an evangelist is. Apologist, I was telling you, is a term that was first coined in the second century. For example, Justin Martyr, an early Christian apologist, made clear reference to a document called the Acts of Pilate in a letter addressed to the Roman Emperor Antoninus Pius, and this was in the year AD 150. He described in detail the passion of Jesus, and he wrote, and I quote, "The expression 'they pierced my hands and feet' was used in reference to the nails of the cross, which were fixed in his hands and feet. And after he was crucified, they cast lots upon his venture, and they that crucified him parted it among them. And that these things did happen, you can ascertain from the Acts of Pilate." Now, Justin went on to list many of Jesus' miracles, such as the healing of the blind and the lepers. He also credits Jesus with raising people from the dead. This description of Jesus' deeds is concluded with the following words: "And that he did these things, you can learn from the Acts of Pilate." What were the Acts of Pilate? It was a report that the Roman governor made to send in to Emperor Tiberius about all the unusual things that had happened to Jesus. Justin assumed that this record still existed in the official Roman archives and that Antoninus Pius could verify the facts easily. Justin's whole purpose in writing his letter was to obtain mercy from the highest official in the known world, and in doing so, spare Christian community a persecution which was becoming so commonplace in his day. Now, it's pretty unlikely that Justin would ask a Roman emperor to check a document if he did not feel extremely confident that the document existed. Otherwise, he would be foolishly putting his own life and reputation at risk. Today, we have the same task: to defend Christianity morally and intellectually. The field of apologetics is not just about dusty archaeology and museum house papyrus. When somebody asks how a loving God could send somebody to hell, they are asking for apologetics. When your friend wants to know why Jesus is the only way to God as opposed to some other sincere religion, he or she is asking for apologetics. How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? Why did the God of the Old Testament command war? Isn't he a God of peace? And isn't the Bible kind of chauvinistic and behind the times? Why does the Bible say that premarital sex is a sin? Why does the Bible teach homosexuality is a sin? Didn't God create homosexuals just the way they are? Doesn't God want everyone to be happy? Such questions, folks, not only ask for apologetics, they scream out for them. Whenever I do a debate on a college campus, the place is packed. Just a few years ago at Arizona State, we had to seat 600, 200 on the floor in a room that only held 400, and turn another 150 away at the door. Why? Because even though debates were the original purpose of universities, they are seldom done today. And when they happen, students eat them up with a spoon. Now, allow me to offer a few obvious but important reasons why apologetics are still relevant today. First, apologetics are commanded in Scripture. 1 Peter 3:12 says, "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect." The word there in Greek for answer is the word apologia. Guess what word we get from apologia? That's right, apologetics. And so to begin this discussion with the simplest foundation possible, one who claims that the subject of apologetics is irrelevant is claiming that a command from Scripture is irrelevant. Often Christians view debate as something either too cerebral or too confrontational. I remember I did a debate one time, and I talked to a Christian brother the next morning. He says, "You were kind of confrontational with that guy." I said, "Well, it was a debate. Was I supposed to get up there and let him make all these comments about Christianity and not confront his worldview?" Now, I remind you that Jesus debated with Pharisees all the time. In fact, if we removed such conversations from the Bible, our Gospels would be very brief. And in the book of Acts, we read about a man named Apollos. I'm reading from Acts 18:28. "For he rigorously refuted the Jews in public debate, proving from the Scriptures that Jesus was the Christ." And let's not forget the very first Christian martyr, Stephen, who was stoned to death for being too persuasive during a debate. Was this some cerebral, fleshly, unspiritual skill? No, on the contrary, we're told that his wisdom came from the Holy Spirit. Now, it's unfair to preach a message as life-changing as the gospel without verification. Think about it. We are literally telling people that they will end up in hell for all of eternity, and I know that sounds like a horrible message. At first, it does. I don't think it sounds horrible when you really dissect what you're talking about, but telling someone they're going to hell for all of eternity if they do not accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior, nobody wants to end up in hell. At the same time, nobody wants to dedicate his life to a fantasy or what might possibly be a waste of time. People have a right to ask the very understandable question, how do I know this to be true? You have asked me for a life commitment. You've painted a horrific picture of what will happen if I refuse. Please convince me that if I make this commitment, I'm committing myself to something real. At this point, the smiley Christian, and Christians must always be smiley, they reply, brother, you must accept it on faith. Are you catching on, folks? Do you see why atheists have such a heyday with Christianity? I mean, who can blame them? Why should people follow something that's not true? In most of my formal debates, the opponent begins by talking about the ridiculousness of blind faith. It's only when I redefine faith that the discussion changes. When people talk about other disciplines, history, science, math, politics maybe, people are very interested in facts. But religion? Oh, that's a whole different story. This common approach may be understandable. Many religions don't even offer facts. Even when we read the New Testament, which does offer them, we tend to look at passages about faith with a contemporary understanding. People mistakenly conclude that the Bible is asking us to fry our brains. They define a Christian as one who says, hey, I have no idea whether or not God exists or Jesus exists, but hey, I know. I'll just live my life as if he does exist, and when I die, if it turns out that by chance I was right, God will reward me for having been so gullible and stupid. Faith is generally looked at as a blind leap in the dark, some naive acceptance of a completely unsubstantiated teaching. Supposedly, God is fond of those who worship him, apart from any shred of data. Now, I cannot possibly say this clearly. That popular definition of faith is light years from the biblical definition, light years. Actually, faith in Jesus' day was not defined the way 21st century Americans use the word. In a paraphrase nutshell, the Bible says, since you know that God is real, it would be foolish not to place your faith in him. See the difference? New Testament writers verified the existence of God before even mentioning faith. They were convinced that Jesus' resurrection from the dead was a fact. Most of them had witnessed it themselves, and they were confident that recent history could satisfy anyone who had not been there. Even more significant, the Holy Spirit, the third person of the Trinity, continued to bear witness as he probed and worked in the hearts of seeking people. I'm reading from 1 John 3:24. John says, and this is how we know that he lives in us. We know it by the Spirit he gives. He doesn't say, I think. He doesn't say, I believe. He doesn't say, I might. He knows because the Spirit lives in him. In other words, a person could meet God through his Spirit, but God. Faith for the biblical generation had to do with trusting this God whom they just met to work in their lives. Now, my Christian pilgrimage over the years, unfortunately, has forced me to accept two depressing realities. One, when it comes to religion, most people are not interested in truth. And two, many American churchgoers are also uninterested in truth. They're always talking about faith, and they wouldn't know how to tell you that this was truth for the life of them. But I'm going to tell you, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. I just read from John 14, and people, those words must mean something. And there is no law of literary criticism that can transpose them to read, I am whatever you want truth to be. I am that zone of comfort which exists in your imagination to get you through your version of life. Maybe, just maybe, instead, the words mean exactly what they say. Maybe it's time to admit that if Christianity isn't true, Christianity would be meaningless. We should stop evangelizing. We should stop going to church. We should stop doing whatever we associate with Christianity. And I'm not just saying this. Paul said it. He said it in 1 Corinthians. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. More than that, we are then found to be false witnesses about God. For we have testified about God that he raised Christ from the dead. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Why should somebody follow something that isn't true? Why should somebody become a Christian if it's about blind faith? Is it true? Well, I believe it is. And here to join me in the discussion is one of my reoccurring co-hosts. We have him on every few months, calling all the way from Missouri, Greg Jarvis. Welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks. How are you?
Good. I got a chance to talk with your lovely wife on the phone this morning when I wanted to confirm that you were coming.
Yeah.
That is, I assume she's still lovely. I only had the phone, so I actually couldn't look at her.
But she's listening right now.
Well, she was lovely the last time I saw her. You think she's lovely, don't you, Greg?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're not dumb enough to go there. Well, but no, I don't think you have to lie on this one. Leslie's quite stunning. I don't know about the guy she married, but yeah, she is.
Yeah.
What have you been doing with yourself lately?
Not a lot, except getting larger, you know, the middle age spread.
You know what? You're a number of years younger than me, and you're calling yourself middle-aged. That just downright depresses me. How old are you now?
I'm 47.
47. Well, that makes me feel like 54 going on 55. Boy,
you're basically an old fart.
I'm seeing parts of my body, Greg, that they could date with carbon 14. That's how I'm cold. Well, you heard a little of what I was talking about, and yeah. I know that you always come with thought-provoking questions and comments of your own. So anywhere you want to go, buddy, as always, the sky's the limit until I get tired of you.
Okay. Well, that shouldn't take long. Hey, well, you know, I think that's the two distinctions to make. You know, you had mentioned that someone was, a lot of people say today that apologetics is irrelevant on the campus. It's not, obviously it's not irrelevant if it's something that can make a difference and something that's needed to make a difference. Some people can feel it's irrelevant because maybe it's not, you know, being activated or it's not doing any good or whatnot. Or is it more that it's actually just being ignored? And I don't think it's actually being completely ignored. I was watching on TV a while ago, I don't know, a couple of months ago, there was a special on professors that had creationism views.
Yes.
And they were being denied tenure, and they were being, you know, kind of outcast, if you will, because of their beliefs, because they weren't buying into the typical scientific thought. So it's not being ignored. It's at times aggressively being suppressed.
Well, that's my point. The campus itself not only is not ignoring it, but they're preaching against it. I mean,
right.
I did a talk a couple of times on universities called "Does Christianity Belong in the College Campus?" because of the separation between church and state thing. One of the points I make is, boy, for people that say that Christianity doesn't belong out here, you sure wouldn't know it, because we're always hearing about how the Bible contradicts itself and how chauvinistic Christianity is and how racist it is. I know none of those accusations are actually true. They're taught by people who, in the tradition of Bill Maher, have an arrogance that's only about as big as their ignorance. So that's the problem. It's very relevant to them, and yet when Christians try to defend it on the other side, boy, sometimes the ACLU could be there faster than you think. So I think a lot of campus ministers are laying low, and there could be, you know, for want of a better word, an actual cowardice, but that's only part of it. I know I have a lot of friends in campus ministry, and they're not cowards. Some of them have actually bought into this popular idea that it's just irrelevant. There is a popular movement today called the Emergent Church, Greg, and about 90% of it is attractive and dead on accurate. But unfortunately, that makes the fallacious 10% all the more potent, because truth mixed with falsehood is a dangerous drink. And they'll talk a lot about how we need to do some contextualization and talk in the language of the people and be relevant. But then they'll also start saying things like, and we got to make sure we don't come across like we have a corner on the truth. Well, okay, if they mean first impression, you look arrogant because you're immediately going, I know the truth. I can see that if we're talking about style and tact and, you know, the old saying, you straighten teeth better with a brace than a hammer. But you start listening to these guys talk long enough, and I've read some of their books, and I even had one of the guys on my radio show. Some of these books like Velvet Elvis and Blue Light Jazz, people like Rob Bell, yeah, I'm reading them carefully. And they're actually saying, who are we to have the audacity to say that we can understand what the Bible actually means?
Yeah.
And I'm going, no, wait a minute. So we don't know what it means. We have to interpret it. I always have a very simple question for somebody like that. I said, well, if we don't really know what it means and we can interpret it any way we want, why did God bother to give it to us? Why not just let us sit around at Starbucks and make it mean whatever we want? And the other one is, and I love this, it's a subtle little thing that we don't catch because it's so nuanced. They'll say, you sound arrogant when you claim you have a corner on the truth. And I'll say, now, should I absolutely not have a corner on the truth? Or is it just your opinion that I should not have a corner on the truth? They say, well, absolutely, you should not have a corner on the truth. I go, so then what you're saying is, you know for a fact, it is absolutely true that it is inappropriate for me to be talking about truth, which means they're doing the exact thing they're accusing me of doing. And it's such a double standard, they don't even know it. We shouldn't be having arguments about whether it's appropriate to talk about truth. Everybody will call something true. We should have arguments, friendly arguments, but arguments about what is true.
Well, absolutely. But do you think part of the problem today on campuses, and I don't know because it's been a while since I've been on a campus, but is part of the problem today is that there's not enough apologetics going on, that there's not enough of a defense, or that oftentimes Christians tend to look just like everybody else? And so here you have somebody who says they have a belief, says they have a faith. It's different than, you know, this other person's beliefs and faith, and yet their life looks no different.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because if a Christian lives hypocritically, then people say, well, boy, it doesn't look like Jesus changed your life, buddy.
Right. It says it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what you believe.
Yeah.
And yet here you are telling me this is really important and you got to believe it and it's just, you know, life and death. And yet you don't seem any different than anyone else.
I agree with you. And also Christians could do things to correct their reputation, and sometimes actions speak louder than words. That's why I said at the beginning of the program, I certainly think apologetics is only one small part of the pie, but there are so many onslaughts against Christianity coming from the academia that I don't think it's an either or thing. I think it's both. And I do believe that a lot of Christian organizations today are doing a much better job with the love and the tolerance. I mean, but they're becoming tolerant almost to the point where they're more politically correct than Christian. But I have a good friend, a great brother, his name's Joe Shea, and he ministers at Worcester State. And he told me a story just a couple of years ago. At the beginning of the year, they'd go into people's dorm rooms and they'd say, we're Christians. So immediately they're like, oh, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about the gospel. Bug off. As if they were talking to Jehovah's Witnesses or something. And Joe said, hey, we're not here to talk about the Bible. We're not here to tell you anything you don't want to hear. They go, well, then why are you here? They said, we're here to clean your stoves and help you move in and scrub your floors and bring you a meal. And of course, they're going, what's the catch? And there was, here's the thing, is there was no catch. I know some Christians go and do something like that, and there is a catch. With Joe, there was no catch. So, of course, that spoke volumes. That's going to bring somebody to the kingdom sooner than a discussion of the Dead Sea Scrolls, obviously.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when a professor gets up in a class and says, not only is Christianity ridiculous and you're a pea brain if you believe it, but to talk about it and defend it is unconstitutional, well, we've got to do something about that, or Christians won't even be allowed to go out on the campus and knock on the door and clean the stove and clean the floors in love. Greg, hang with me over the break. We'll be right back.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my good friend calling all the way from Illinois, Greg Jarvis.
Not Illinois.
I did that the last time you were on.
Yeah, you do that every time.
It's Missouri. Wait, I know the truth. It's Missouri. Did I say Illinois when I introduced you at the top of the show, too?
No, you said Missouri.
Oh, I said Missouri the first time.
Yeah, you did.
So if I'd have kept my big mouth shut and not reintroduced you, nobody would have been the wiser.
Right.
Well, I know I said it before. To me, the Midwest is just the Midwest. To we in California, it's one big blog out there.
Yeah. Well, and to me out here, too. It's kind of... No, it's great. And today, oh, my gosh, it feels just like a California day.
What does a California day feel like?
Because
day it rains here, one day it's hot here.
Oh, no. Does it? No.
Oh, you mean California the way everybody in the country thinks we are, but
right.
We never really are?
Right, sipping wine and enjoying the beach and, you know.
Well, you know, it's a common delusion that Californians don't have the four seasons like everybody else, but we do. We call them fires, floods, earthquakes, and riots, so we do have our four seasons.
There you go. Well, you know, getting to this apologetics and whatnot, is it in fact a... kind of a condition of our where we're at as a society that people really don't want to hear particular truth, or have we been so geared towards seeing things as, I don't know, as fluff, as feeling, as opinion, and that's as deep as we go now, whereas maybe our forefathers, they got into things deeper and had evidence for things, whereas in today's society it's make a good case. Let me give you an example. Paris Hilton. Have you heard of her?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, who hasn't?
She's one of the most popular people, one of the most searched on the internet people.
And she's not just some blonde twit. She's done a few things that, even when she does pop things, she made a very clever ad about the election just about a couple of months ago.
Well, I'm sure she was instructed.
Yeah, well, you know, the people call her a twit, and she probably worries about it all the way to the bank.
But here's my point. She is. She's phenomenally wealthy, but here's my point. she isn't known, from what I understand, to have any talent.
I didn't know talent was ever associated with her. This is the first I've heard about it,
Greg.
That's
exactly my point.
Who put out the rumor that Paris Hilton has talent? Why didn't they tell me?
My point is here's a person without, and she's probably, if you get to know her, a nice person, and I'm not saying anything against her, but what I'm saying is not a lot of substance per se, but commands a lot of attention and money and fame, and I'm wondering if that is in part what we are doing as a society with other things, especially things as important as truth.
I think there's something to that. Part of one of the things that happened is we did go from the age of enlightenment and reason to the postmodern age. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned earlier, what that's supposed to be is that we shouldn't be dogmatic about truth. People are more into experiences than thinking. When you say something's absolutely true, you're dogmatic. Now, here's the problem. That's the conventional wisdom. That's what's actually being taught at the university. Now, Christians want to reach the university, and they go, oh, well, then these people are telling us that the truth and apologetics is irrelevant. The problem is the only way, Greg, to test a philosophy is to see if people really live by it. When somebody says there's no such thing as truth, and therefore Christians should not be judgmental, well, A, they just judged a Christian because they said it's wrong to be judgmental. And two, they made a truth statement because they said it's absolutely true that you shouldn't be judgmental. We're going through this in California with this marriage initiative. I don't know if you're following that from all the way out in Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
But, of course, the Supreme Court overturned the will of the people, and now we're trying to get it as an amendment on the Constitution. And, oh, the pastor of my church, Skyline, is spearheading this thing, and he's being accused of the most vile things, and he's the most loving man. He has, I know it sounds cliche, but he not only does he have gay friends, but he has militant activist gay friends, and yet he's just being pillared. And it's all a tactic, and in the name of intolerance, Christians are being vilified. And then I ask a very simple question. I say, well, are you? I have a different view than you do of homosexuality. Are you tolerant of my view? And the moment you say that you're not, I would say, why? And then you say, well, because you're being judgmental. I say, well, you're judging the fact that I'm judging. Or they say, well, you're being dogmatic because you're saying absolutely homosexuality is wrong. And I go, yeah, but you're saying absolutely homosexuality is right. If you want me to be open to the fact that it might be right, maybe you should be open to the fact that it might be wrong. But the thing is, Greg, the whole purpose of an open mind is to examine data and then eventually make a decision and close your mind. So nobody tolerates everything. Somebody says we should have tolerance. Oh, really? So we should tolerate a rapist? We should tolerate a cold-blooded murderer? We should tolerate an institution like slavery? And then all of a sudden they realize they don't tolerate everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, okay, so let's get that off the table. Let's quit arguing about whether there should be tolerance or not. Everybody tolerates some things, and everybody is intolerant of other things. The $50 million question is, what are the things? Why am I tolerating this, and why am I tolerating it? Why am I intolerant of that? And then I think we could have a real dialogue. Now, what I mean then is that when the campus claims to be postmodern and says it isn't interested in truth, but at every turn and every crack, they pillar Christianity and say Christianity is not true and try to rip it to shreds. Well, anybody that finds it a fascinating discussion that Christianity is not true is going to find it just as fascinating when somebody comes back and defends it. They may disagree. They may get angry, but I got to tell you, I'd rather go out to a campus where people are angry than go out to a campus where nobody cares. Now, there is a place where Christianity is irrelevant, and that's in Fargo, North Dakota, because everything's irrelevant up there unless you're doing farming. I mean, I walked around their student union. They had video there. They had television sets, so you'd think they were being modern, but the only thing I was seeing on the TV was cows walking. I'd much rather go out to UCSB or Berkeley or someplace where a person goes, yeah, I'm sick and tired of you Christians. The minute he says that, you go, okay, maybe Christianity has a reputation. Maybe we're going to have a feisty conversation, but you can't call it irrelevant. And I'll tell you, I've done so many different events on campuses. I do a drum. I do a lecture. Sometimes we pack the place. Sometimes there's 20 people. We do a debate. We pack the place every time because debates used to be the whole purpose that a campus was created. And now they're so rare that students want to eat it up with a spoon. So you can't tell me it's irrelevant. But what's happened is the campus ministers have bought into the idea that it's irrelevant. So they're trying to go about and bring up the gospel with all these subtle nuances. And yes, they're leading some people to Christ, and they're being very loving. And on an individual basis, they're challenging many. But the institution isn't changing. The kind of teaching we're getting from the top down isn't changing. And another thing that contributes toward that is the belief amongst a lot of Christians of the second coming of Christ. They go, well, we're not here to change anything because Jesus is going to return. And he's going to return and destroy the earth and recreate it. Well, what if he doesn't return for another 2,000 years? The first church 2,000 years ago thought Jesus was going to come in their generation. They were wrong. Why are evangelical Christians today so darn sure he's going to come in our generation? And what kind of generation are we going to leave behind for our children and our grandchildren if he doesn't return as quickly as we think?
Yeah. Well, in those situations where, you know, those debates and people are wanting to hear, that should be encouraging, I hope, to those that are working on the campus. And I would hope, it would be my hope, that when they're leading people to Christ in a quiet, sensitive way, that they aren't ignoring apologetics, because apologetics seems to be then the foundation of what their faith rests on.
Well, unfortunately, and the quick answer to that question is some would be ignoring it and some wouldn't. But the problem is, if we're saying it's irrelevant, then we're not teaching people with it and we're not equipping. Now, it's really interesting because I find this with pastors too. A lot of pastors are just plain intimidated by apologetics. Now, I don't mean them any disrespect, because these guys do a great job, but their ministry is primarily teaching and counseling and theology, and they're putting out fires and they're administrators, and not everybody's called to be an evangelist. That's one office, and pastor's another. But a pastor who's not versed in apologetics should at least send people to where an apologist is. To the credit of my own pastor, he asked me to join his church because he loves apologetics, but he doesn't always have the time to study, and so he brought me in. And that's an alternative. Stay with me over the break, Greg. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show 4 nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. If you don't think you need such news talk and commentary, just try this quick pop quiz. Does Kevin Billings serve in the California State Senate or the United States Senate? Time's up! You were wrong no matter how you answered, because there is no Kevin Billings, and you might have known that if you'd been listening to the Rick Amato Show. I'm telling you, folks, this is the best talk show in San Diego. Oh, wait, I forgot about my own program. I'm telling you, folks, this is one of the two best talk shows in San Diego and the only live local evening talk show in San Diego. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Are apologetics irrelevant today? What are apologetics? The defense of Christianity morally, the defense of Christianity academically. I'm joined by my guest, Greg Jarvis from Missouri.
Yay.
Greg, welcome back.
Thanks. Hey, pastors, you were making the point that a lot of them are intimidated, oftentimes maybe not equipped in the area of apologetics, and certainly it would be good for them to have somebody that can teach that in the church. And I think possibly a lot of times they're that way because they're not themselves often challenged, because in their particular position or job, they're often, in a way, preaching to the choir. They're preaching and teaching in a Christian-friendly environment to people that aren't always asking a lot of questions, aren't always challenging the views, but simply going along with what the pastor teaches, which might lend itself to not having apologetics, but sounds like a dangerous spot too, because I think the out in the audience, they need to be constantly reviewing what's being taught and ask those questions.
You're absolutely right, Greg. They're minding the store.
Wait a minute, Bob. What did you say?
I said you're absolutely right. Did you hear that, Leslie?
I couldn't quite get that.
Is Leslie listening on the radio? Did she hear me say that you're absolutely right?
If not, I'm getting a recording of this.
Oh, did you really not hear it, Greg?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, you never know here at a radio station, because stranger things have happened. But I thought you were just doing your regular, brilliant, sardonic, clever wit. Yes, you are absolutely right, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, but my heart only goes so deep. Somebody has to mind the store, and the pastor has a hard job. I'm telling you, it's much easier for me to go around and be a guest. I was a pastor for many years. It's much more fun to go around and be a guest speaker in churches and college campuses. When you're a pastor, they complain what color your tie is, and the Fergusons are having a problem. They have to put out fires. It's a much harder job, and they have nothing but my admiration, and they should have our support. But it's also true that they're in a place where not only does apologetics not come up, it's not necessarily the purpose of the church to defend the fact that it's true. That's something a non-believer wants to hear before he comes in. Now, granted, sometimes after people make the commitment, it's good for them to learn about it so that they can be trained and go out and defend it to other people. But yes, you're absolutely right. If you're out on a college campus and you're hearing Christianity slammed all the time, I mean, then it's a different story. I remember a couple of years ago, I spoke at this tiny but charming little church in a little town in New Hampshire. I mean, it seemed like Mayberry. I was wondering what time Aunt B was going to start the bazaar and when Goober was going to be done with my car. And we were talking about gay marriage and things that were going on. And there was a woman, young adult, in her 20s. She literally could not believe and didn't know that things like that were going on out there. Now, I had two reactions. One, it was nice to know there's a spot in the beltway somewhere where there's still that kind of innocence. But two, my goodness, can you just imagine if she ever took a trip to downtown Boston or something and tried to share the gospel with somebody?
Yeah, she wouldn't be prepared. We need to be prepared, kind of like the Bereans. We're kind of like the Munchkins.
Let's define some terms to those who are not Christians. The Bereans were people who, when they heard the Apostle Paul, checked the scriptures to make sure that what he was saying was true.
Absolutely.
And they were called the faithful Bereans. That's why so many Christian bookstores are named. Do you have a Bereans bookstore out where you are?
I believe we do.
I think every state has a Bereans bookstore.
And that's what the Munchkins did, too. To see
the Munchkins and the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, to see if the witch was morally, ethically, spiritually, physically, positively, absolutely, undeniably, and reliably dead.
I did that go, as cold as I looked at her, I thoroughly examined her.
That's exactly right.
I won't do any more.
Not only merely dead, but most sincerely.
Oh, yeah, I got to finish it. She's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead. People, if you're regular listeners to my radio show, I promise you'll never hear me do that again.
But see, that's important. It is important. It's a shame that people are thinking that it's irrelevant or that it's not necessary on campus or anywhere else, really, because without checking the facts, without challenging people, including believers, you end up with a watered-down version of something that is only marginally true, and that's not something that's going to benefit people.
No, and it's a which came first, the chicken or the egg. The campus minister hears that the campus believes truth is irrelevant, so they try to talk to them in a way that doesn't sound as truthful. But meanwhile, as we've observed, nobody deep in their hearts believes truth is irrelevant because they make truth claims all the time. We got to point that out. Greg, you're my good friend. Always good to have you. We'll have you on again in a couple of months.
All right, Bob. Thanks.
Take care. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.